Record.
We're holding on page 90 in Tynus, three lines from the bottom, middle of Isiud Beis. We're in the middle of, we've had a whole bunch of things that Rav Nachman asked Rav Yitzchak. The last thing we had was they were sitting at a Suda and they had the whole discussion about Yaakov and Ulei Mitz. So now continuing from that, Omer Rav Yitzchak. So now comes Rav Yitzchak and says something without Rav Nachman prompting him like with the other ones. He said, we learned this one in Megillah as well. Anybody who would say Rochav's name twice, and the Gemara tells us, we learned in Megillah, that Rochav was one of the most beautiful women who ever lived, so anybody who would even say her name twice, Miyad Nikli would right away become a Balkeri because he has such a type for her. Rochav, she's the one, she's the Isha Zoyna from Yericho. She's the one where when Yeshua's two Meraglim come to Yericho in Yeshua Perveis, she's the one who hides them, and then she tells them, I realize that that Hashem is going to help you conquer Eretz Yisrael, so I want you to save my family, etc., etc. In the end, we learned in Megillah, she became a Geyoris and she married Yeshua. Anyway, so now, anybody who says her name twice would right away become a Balkeri because she was so beautiful. Rav Nachman, I know I'm mean of Lo Yifasli. Rav Nachman says, I can say Rochav, Rochav, and nothing happens. So Rav Yitzchak explains to him, Ki kamina bi yoda umakiro umazkira shmo kamina. I'm talking about somebody who knew her personally. Yoda, Rashi explains that yoda and makira are two different words for the same thing. So it means somebody who knows her personally. Umazkira shmo, and then he mentions her name. Tosfos explains that actually Yoda and Makira would be two different things. Yoda means somebody who had relations with her, where she was a Zoyna, and the Gemara tells us in Zvachim, in fact, that she plied that profession for 40 years before the Meraglim showed up. So somebody who actually had relations with her, of Makira, or at least somebody who knows her personally, of Mazkir Shimon mentions her name. There is, in the printed Gemara, you have, over Mazkir or Shema is in parenthesis, and in Megillah we didn't have it either, and there are various Meforshim, among others, the Gvura Sari points out it really doesn't belong over here, because obviously we're talking about he mentions her name, Rabbi Yitzchak is saying that he says Rochav Rochav. So again, most of the Meforshim understand that we mean that he actually knows her in person, although Iyun Yaakov points out conceivably you could have, for example, if somebody had a picture of her, it might have the same effect on him. Tosfos says, that's what I'm saying. The Yoda means Shabala, or Makira means that he saw her, yeah. So again, according to Rashi, Yoda and Makira are two words meaning the same thing. According to Tosfos, they mean two different things. We're still saying that saying Rochav Rochav would give him such a taiva that Miyadni. There's an explanation from Rav Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, actually is an explanation on the previous piece as well. He has his own take on the whole Yaakov and Ulei Mes thing. But anyway, he explains afterwards that Rochav represents Bina of Klippa, and he gives various explanations of why that's so, and therefore therefore Yodo Makira can cause that the person now becomes Tomei, that now he falls into Ra, because Bina has an association in general with Klippas, and especially her, and then he goes on to explain the deeper point of that in the end she did Shuvah and married Yeshua, and he explains also in that connection why it is that Rav Nachman particularly is saying that it doesn't matter to me, that it doesn't affect me, because Rav Nachman is from a different, sphere that has nothing directly to do with Bina, and therefore he's not bothered by it. He didn't know her, right? So that's what Rav Yitzchak is telling him, because you didn't know her. But the point is, the very fact that Rav Nachman is asking, I know I'm in a Rochav, Rochav, v'lo yichpasli, so Rav Levick explains that there's a deeper idea behind it of why Dr. Rav Nachman is the one bringing up that point. We talked about yesterday one of the sichas about Yaakov Avinu Lo Mes of Chelek Lamed Hey, which is taken from a sicha from Tavshin Lamed Aleph, where they ever analyzed this whole point. Afterwards, there's a part, non-mugadik part, which you can find in Sichas Kodesh and in Svadurias and all, that ever talks about the idea that this is also connected with what we said before about the whole thing with Teva, about the relationship between Teva and the way a Yid lives and the way a Yid keeps mitzvahs, that here also there's a certain Teva there that a person sees, that a person knew Rochav on a personal level and sees her and even sees a picture afterward, like the Iyun Yaakov says, then it can have a negative effect on him. So it all goes together. In other words, the same way as Rav Yitzchak was telling Rav Nachman, you can't talk during the meal because after all, you have to take into consideration the gashmiistic effect that you might choke on your food. The same way over here, you have to be careful with this because of the gashmiistic effect of that it might have an effect on you. That pictures back then, I mean, they didn't have photos, but they had bad pictures, yeah. Yeah, for example, I mean, they have, there is the famous story, although the provenance of the story, I'm not so sure, Tiferes Yisrael brings it, I think I'm perfectly obvious, but where he got it from is a little questionable, but anyway, there's a famous story involving a portrait of Moshe Rabbeinu, that there's this king who heard about everything that happened with Moshe, and so he sends his court artist to paint a picture, figuring that then he can have his wise men analyze and see what makes Moshe tick. They bring back the picture and the wise men look at it and says, this is the face of a murderer. And the king is very angry with the artist. He obviously painted the wrong guy. How is that possible? Kitzer Amaisa, the story goes that he goes back and asks Moshe Rabbeinu what's going on. And Moshe tells him, I do have that teva, but I overcame it through learning Torah and doing mitzvahs and being close to the Eved. Is it an Oskahalt in the story? I don't know, but it is a weird story, but yeah. He did kill Mitzri after all, that's true. Alright, anyway. He had a mifter. When Rav Nachman was taking leave of Rav Yitzchak, that's the way we have it over here, although the Ramaphoshim, actually, the Rav Yaakov Emden points out it may have been the other way around. Rav Yitzchak is visiting Rav Nachman and Bavel and telling them all kinds of things that Rav Yochanan taught in Eretz Yisrael. Now he's taking leave to return to Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, either way, Omalei, so he says, Livorchan Ma, Rebbe, give me a brach. Omalei, so he answers in Emshal Chamashal Ma Dover Doimah. You're asking for a brach, let me give you a mashal to illustrate what's going on over here. La Odom Shay Mahalach Ben Bidbar, a person was walking in the desert. He was hungry and tired and thirsty. And he comes across a tree that has very sweet fruit. So that'll deal with his hunger. And it has nice shade. So now he's tired. He can rest in the shade of it. And there's a stream of water flowing right underneath it, meaning that therefore so he'll be able to drink from the water. So all his three problems are now taken care of. So he ate the fruit, drank some of the water, and he sat in the shade of the tree. When he's getting ready to go, he says, Elon, what kind of a bracha can I give you? Should I bless you that your fruit should be sweet? They're already sweet. I don't have to bless you with that. That your shade should be beautiful. Your shade is already beautiful. That you should have a constant stream of water. You have that. Ella, rather, the bracha that I can give you, tree, yihirotzen, shakon natias, shenotim mimcha, that all the plantings that are taken from you, although you take a branch or a twig from a tree, and you plant it someplace else, and you have a clone of the original tree, Yil Kamoscha should be like you and have all these mites. Afata, so the same way Rav Nachman says to Rav Yitzchak, or Rav Yitzchak says to Rav Nachman, as the case may be, Bameh Avarecha, what am I supposed to give you a brach? Imba Torah, Hare Yesh Lecha Torah. You have Torah already. Vim L'Gdula, Hare Yesh Lecha Gdula. Vim L'Kavod, Hare Yesh Lecha Kavod. You already have greatness, you already have Kavod. Vim L'Osher, Hare Yesh Lecha Osher. You're rich. Im L'Bonim, Hare Yesh Lecha Bonim. You already have children. In fact, this might be one of, so one of the explanations is, in fact, that we don't specifically find that Rabbi Yitzchak was the, so Eitz Yosef points out this may be a proof that it's Rabbi Nachman asking Rabbi Yitzchak for a bracha. And therefore, Rabbi Yitzchak would be answering him this because Rabbi Nachman, we know from other Gemaras, was rich. He was a son-in-law of the Reish Kavosa, so he was very powerful and rich. And we find so evidently he had at least some of the things we're saying over here. We can assume he had the others as well. Whereas Rabbi Yitzchak, we don't specifically find one way or the other that he had them. So that makes it more logical to say that it's Rabbi Nachman asking Rabbi Yitzchak for a bracha and Rabbi Yitzchak answering with this mashal and nimshal. Anyway, so you have all of the above. And Marshall points out they all correspond. Now the Girsa in the Gemara, you have over here the Dula and the Kovod are in parenthesis. The Girsa in the printed Gemara, which is what Marshall follows, is that he's saying you have Torah, you have Osher, and you have Boni. So he says each of those corresponds to one of the three things that the tree had. The tree had sweet fruit that corresponds to the Torah. So that corresponds to the later on in the parak. In fact, we have, there's a comparison between Tamid Chacham and a tree that produces fruit. So therefore, so he has, so he has Peres Mesukin corresponding to the Torah, or Mesukin Midvash for Nosef Sufram, that the Torah is sweeter than honey and anything else. The shade represents the riches, as we have the Pasuk, Betzela Chochma, Betzela Kosef, that a person can be in the shade, in the protection of Chochma, or the protection of money, each of them, whether a person has Chochma of Torah, or whether he has riches from which he gives Tzedakah, either of that helps protect him. Helps him protect him in this world. So therefore, the shade is comparable to that. And the children represent, is represented by the stream of water because the Zaroi B'mayim Rabbah, find the pasuk, that a person has descendants that are like many waters. Anyway, so therefore, so you have all those things. Eli Yehirotzen Shiyu Kol Tzetzoi Me'ach HaKamoicha. So the Eibishter should be the Eibishter's Rotzen, that that all of your descendants should be exactly like you. They should have all of these mayims. Now, Rashi uses the expression that he's saying that you have, that he's saying you have Torah, Osher, and Kavod. So where is Rashi getting Kavod from? So Marsha, in fact, says maybe the word Kavod in Rashi is a misprint and it should really be Bonim. And that would correspond to the three things. On the other hand, the fact is we do have in the parenthesis over here a different Girsa that he's saying that you have Kavod. And so a couple of them before we should talk about why, so that would be where Rashi is getting it from. And also, a point would be, for example, not necessarily is the Rif points out that Dula and Kavod are not necessarily such a thing to bench him with. We find that those things can shorten a person's life. Whereas the other things, Osher and Bonim and Torah, those will live long. And then Ion Yaakov says also, since we have a teres skein and bnei bonim, that a person has covered from his children and his grandchildren that he has nachas from, then therefore that automatically includes covered as well. Therefore Rashi can say that he's saying that you already have covered by virtue of the fact that he has children. Further on, now getting back to now all of these discussions between Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Nachman was all digression because we started talking about the Yodo Malkush. We said we brought in the Mishnah there was a posuk where they quoted a posuk from Yoel that said that there was a time when the Moda and the Malkush fell Barishan in the first month in Nisan, and we had the whole story over there of what happened in the times of Yoel after the plague of locusts. And based on that posuk in the Mishnah, Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Yossi had said that you should continue davening for rain until Nisan is over. So now let's get back to the matter of Yoda and Malkush. Why are they called that? Tonanabon, Yoda. Now, so what it is, you know, we live over here in New York where we don't have a defined rainy season. If anything, it probably rains more here during the summer than it does any other time of year. Right now, for example, yeah. But in Eretz Yisrael and other places that have what they call a Mediterranean climate, you have a certain defined season of the year when you have rain. In Eretz Yisrael, that time is approximately from Cheshvan through Nisan. You have Yoda is the early rains that come in Cheshvan. The Gemara has a discussion over here. It's in the Gemara, it's not here in Ein Yaakov, about when those are expected to come, various dates during Cheshvan and Kislev. And then you have it rains off and on throughout the winter, and then the last rains of the year come in Nisan, and that's it. You have no rain from then until the following Tishrei or Cheshvan.
This year has been more rain in Crown Heights than there ever was before in the last 43 years. Why? Again. That's how close you are to Mashiach.
Okay.
Simon
Brachman. Very good. It's a Simon Brachman. Okay. I mean. Anyway, yes. So in Eretz Yisrael, you have that. There's other places. Southern California, Lahavdil, is similar to that. Cape Town, South Africa. There's a few places in the world that have a similar climate. Anyway. So, Tananabon and Yoda, why is it called that? Shemoda Sabrias, when that rain comes in Cheshvan time, it instructs people, La'tiach Gagasehen, to plaster their roofs so they don't leak, or La'achnesis Peresehen, to bring in their fruit and their produce, which has been out, drying out in the fields throughout the summer, or the last is called Sochehen, and to do everything else that they need before the rainy season comes. So that's why it's called Yoda. Gavra Acha, another explanation. Shemar Ve'esa'or, that's another reason it's called Yoda. Moloshin Rova, like Kosi Ravoya. It slakes the thirst of the ground. Umashka Es Atahoim or Adatahoim. And it waters all the way. Es Atahoim would be it waters even the depths because the rainwater penetrates through the ground all the way and it replenishes the aquifers underground. Or Adatahoim would be similar. It goes all the way down to the Tahoim. Same thing. So that, therefore it's called Yoda, Moloshin Rova. Shenema, as you have a posit, Tlameha Rabe, it's a typical Samachay, which is talking of the end of it, Torah is asking Hashem for the bracha of rain. Tlameha Rabe, fill up and then slake the thirst of its furrows. So they plowed the field. The fields are full of furrows that are ready for plants to start growing in. So slake its thirst with rain. Naches gedudeha. Calm down and make it easier for gedudeha, for its groups of people. Rashi points out that chapter of the pasuk is gedudeha just means the many people who live in the land. Later on, in the parak, it darshins that gedudeha means also bands of soldiers. Even they are calmed down when there's rain because they don't go marauding when it's raining because it's not the weather for it. Anyway, that's naches gedudeha. So naches, yeah, means calm them. So naches gedudeha, the simple meaning, Rashi says, means calm down the gedudeha, the people, the many people who live in the land, where they feel better and they feel calmer when there's rain and they know that it's going to be a bumper crop this year. Later on, the Gemara explains, it also means gedudeha means bands of soldiers that even they are calmed down and even they are at ease when there's rain because they don't go marching around and then causing trouble or whatever when it's raining. Anyway, the pasuk continues, "Virvivim t'magigena," with showers you will melt it, because the showers of rain like melt the hard ground and soften it. "Simcha tevarech," you will bless its plants. So we see, in other words, that that rain is associated with the word rave, and therefore the yoreh is called that from the same shorash. Davar acher, yet another explanation. It's called yoreh, she yoreh benachas. It's called yoreh because it falls gently, ve'ena yoreh b'zap. It doesn't fall hard, where it's going to break things or whatever. So Marsha brings actually from Sifra and from Yalkut Shimoni that the point is that Yoda means like an arrow, like the word Yoda is used in the shooting of an arrow, means it goes directly to where it needs to go rather than becoming a flood and just randomly flooding places. But the Gemara continues, Oy Eina El Yoda Kemasher Saperis. Maybe the word Yoda actually has a negative meaning. All this time we're saying that Yoda is Maloshin Bracha, but now maybe not. Maybe the word Yoda can actually have a negative sense. In the stand, it actually says, after all, you have the Pasuk before Matan Torah, anybody who goes up to Har Sinai, Yoda Yoda is going to be thrown down. It was going to have stones cast at him. So in other words, the word Yoda can also come from a word that means to break things. So therefore, so it would be, it's a hard rain that causes fruit to fall off the tree. Now, to be sure, Rashi points out, Cheshvan time, you don't have a lot of fruit still on the trees, but you have, for example, a srogim that stay on the tree all year round. You have pomegranates, which ripen later. You have late figs, various things like that. So maybe a yoreh is a harsh rain that breaks off those fruits from the trees, or mashdif es hazroim, and it floods, and then it floods away the seeds that you planted in the ground, or mashaber, or mashatif es elonis, and breaks, or it washes away the trees. And the point would be, so Rashi explains now, maybe in other words, now where do we have yoreh malkush? Is in the beginning of Bahoyim and Shemaya. On the face of it, the pasuk is saying, in a positive sense, Bahoyim and Shemaya tishmo mitzvaysai, then I'll give yoreh malkush. So how could we possibly think that Yoda means something negative? So Rashi explains, maybe the Pasuk is saying like this, if Bahoyim Shemaya Tishmua Mitzvayisai, then good. And the Pasuk is not specifying what's going to happen. But if not, then there's going to be Yoda Malkush, which are going to be negative. So therefore we could understand it that way. Now it's obviously doichot to understand the psukim that way, but Rashi says that's brisis, will often do that. They'll bring up a possibility, even though it's not a realistic possibility, because that's the style of the brisis and the Gemara, is to bring up possible questions, even the most far-fetched question, and answer them. That's the point of Rashi. Maushar doesn't like the whole explanation anyway, and he says what it means is that the pasuk could conceivably mean like this: the yoreh malkush, which when it's be'itoy, it's for a bracha, and when it's not be'itoy, then it can be a klala. So I will bring it be'itoy, so that it will be a bracha. So in other words, v'hoyim shemaya tishmu, then v'nasati mitaratz can be'itoy, and then that way the yoreh malkush, which at other times might be something negative, this time will be something positive. So how do you know? All this time you've been saying that yoreh in and of itself is something positive, but maybe not. No, Tamad Loyer Malkush. Therefore, continues the Braisa, it puts it together with the Malkush. Ma Malkush Lebrocha, and just like the word Malkush is for a Brocha, as the Gemara is going to explain soon. Now, Rashi points out, you can't say, for example, that it means that it's going to wash away the seeds, that are going to be washing away the seeds or making the fruit fall off the trees. When the Malkush comes, which is Nissan time, you don't have any of those things. So of necessity, therefore, the Malkush is obviously not breaking and destroying those things. Therefore, at this point, the Gemara assumes necessarily the Malkush can only be understood as something of Brahma. It has to be understood, and the Gemara is going to explain soon various reasons why that rain is called Malkush. So once we establish that the Malkush is for a bracha, af yoda the bracha, then we understand the yoda, which is placed together with it in the pasuk, is also a bracha. So the word yoda, we should understand, like we did originally, meloshin, that it's moda, that it instructs people to do various pre-winter things, or that it slakes the ground's thirst, or that it comes directly to where it needs to, etc., and therefore that it is, that it, the definition of the word yoda is a rain that comes in the brach. Oy eina ela, but the Braisa said maybe not. Maybe after all the malkush can have other negative effects. Ela oy eina ela malkush shematulos abatim. Maybe it can be called malkush meloshin like this. Now soon the Gemara is going to give a few different definitions of what the word malkush means. One of them Rashi brings to your. So this is all the Havam, and going back and forth, right? So one thing is the Gemara is going to bring a few different drashas. Rashi brings over here one of them that it means that Malkush stands for melulos and kashin. Melulos means the kernels of grain. Kashin means the stalks. So the Malkush falls on them and helps them finish developing. Now, the Gemara is saying, though, that maybe not. Maybe we can say the word malkush itself should be understood as a word of klala, that it comes from the word mol, which means to cut. The word mila comes from the same shardish, and kosher means the hard things. In other words, that it's a cutting rain, and it's harsh on things. Namely, fine, there's no fruit on the trees, and there's no seeds that are still germinating in the ground, but maybe shemakala sabata, maybe it's a kind of hard rain that knocks down houses, or mishabir selonis, and breaks down trees, or mala sakoyin, and causes locusts to come. Sakoya and Rashi explained are a type of locust. So maybe the Malkush is something negative. Tamil Lema Yoda, or Malkush. No, the Pasuk puts together Yoda. Ma Yoda the Bracha, Malkush the Bracha. Now we're doing the opposite of what we said before. Before we assume necessarily Malkush is good, therefore that shows the Yoda must be good. Now we're saying the other way around. Necessarily the Yoda is good, therefore the Malkush has to be good as well. Well, the Yoda Gufamin Olam, where do we know as far as the Yoda itself? Given that we've said now that both the words Yoda and Malkush can have a positive meaning and they can have a negative meaning, why do we say that the Yoda necessarily has a positive meaning and then learn Malkush from it? Dichtiv, because we have the pasuk from Yoel that we brought before. Uvneitzian, gilu smachu b'Hashem alekechem, be happy and rejoice with what Hashem, your God, has done for you, because Hashem has given you the moda as an act of tzedakah, as we learned before about what happened after the 4-year plague of locusts, where the word moda itself has a double meaning, by the way. It means the yoda that we're talking about over here. It also means that Hashem gave you a teacher, the Navi, who taught you to do tshuva. By yoda lachan geshem, and Hashem brought down for you rain, moda, or malkush, the moda, and the malkush, barishan, both in the first month, both in Nisan, as we learned before, the whole story that happens. So we see necessarily, therefore, the moda, which is another name for Yoda, is obviously something good, because the Navi is telling them, be happy with Hashem who gave it to you, and then be grateful to Hashem who gave it to you. So obviously, necessarily, therefore, we have to understand the word Yoda in the positive sense, and therefore, since it goes together with Malkush, then it means that Malkush also has a positive meaning. So the Gemara goes on to say, Tanan Abanan, when do each of these rains take place? Yoda b'mal cheshven and Malkush b'nissen. The Yoda are the rains that come during cheshven, and the Gemara goes on after the part in Enyak over here and brings a few different opinions of when exactly in cheshven it's expected. Or Malkush b'nissen, and the Malkush comes in nissen, shortly before the harvest. Ata omi Yoda b'mal cheshven and Malkush b'nissen. So you're saying that's how it is. Oy eina ella, Yoda b'tishrei and Malkush b'iyah. Maybe not. Maybe in fact the Yoda is the rain that falls in Tishrei and the Malkush takes place in Iyar. So maybe it's longer than you expected. Tamalama be'itoi Malkush. Therefore the Pasuk says, Hashem says, I'll give you rain, be'itoi, and it's time, the Yoda or Malkush. And therefore, Tishrei is too early for the Yoda. You haven't brought in all your grain from the field yet. In fact, that's why Sukkot is called Chag HaOsif, because at the time when you're bringing in all your grain that was drying out in the field all summer. So if it rains, the Yoda during Tishrei, it's going to ruin that. And of course, it'll make it hard to sit in the Sukkot as well. In fact, that is why earlier in the Perek, the Gemara discusses at length why we don't start davening, why we don't even start saying Mashal V'Rochmo Degeshem until Sukkot is over. So therefore, so on the same thing, the malchus, if it comes as late as ear, that's no good for the same reason that it's going to interfere with the harvest. So therefore, so it has to be, so it has to be like that, but they're in cheshvan and nisin respective. Now, why is it called malchus? So b'tzon rabban, it's a tamalama be'itoy. Therefore, it says be'itoy, and it goes on both of them, both the yoda and the malchus are coming at the right time. Rashi also explains, you know, what the point is, that since one meaning of malchus is shiyurid on the lilas falakashin, it falls on the kernels of grain and on the stalks of grain, necessarily that has to be nisin time when you still have both of those. By the time nisin is over, you've already harvested the grain, so now there's no malulus and kashim for the malchus to fall on, therefore necessarily the malchus has to be an ear. That has to be a nisin now. Okay, so why is it called malchus? Omer of Niloy by Idi, Omer Shmuel, Dovashem Mol Kash Yusen Shakashi Sehen Shoy Yisrael. It cuts off, and it cuts off the stubbornness of the Jewish people, because when the malchus in general doesn't fall, Jewish people do tshuva and fast and give tzedakah, and therefore that breaks the hardness of the Jewish people. Marashah points out, in that case, then fine, all the rain should be called that. Why not? Why only the rain of Nisan? So that's one reason. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana and the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they looked at different reason why it's called Malchus. Dovashim Malit Tvur Makasheha, it's the rain that fills up the grain in its stalks. Meaning you have the grain has been growing for months by the time Nisan comes. Now those last rain showers in Nisan help the grain do its final growth spurt so that it'll be as big and good as possible. So that's the Malchus. The Masnisatona and the Brisa we learn Dovash Yurid ala Malulus Falakashin. It's a rain that falls on the Malulus on the grain. Rashi brings, you have the Pasuk, the Katakta Malulus Viadecha. You have where the Pasuk says it's these days being discussed in Dafayomi, where you have the din that a worker in somebody else's field is allowed to eat on the job. He's allowed to pick ears of grain or other produce that he's working on and eat it, and the Pasuk uses the word melilus, which means grain, so we see that melilus means the kernels of grain, balakashin, and the swirl, so the malchus falls that time of year, which is when there's grain still growing in the fields, and there's melilus and kashin for it to fall on. So for all those reasons, it's called malchus. Earlier, by the way, Rashi had pointed out before when the Gemara was entertaining the idea that maybe Malchus could have a negative meaning, one thing is we do find the same Shoresh, Lamed Pukshin, in a Pasuk in Amos, where the Pasuk mentions over there that Amos, the Navi Amos, saw a vision that Hashem is about to bring a plague of locusts on Eretz Yisrael, where the Pasuk calls them Lekesh, and Amos davens on behalf of the Jewish people, Chadol Nomi Yochum Yaakov, and Hashem says, fine, I won't do it. So we see that there is the word lekesh can mean locust, which is why the Gemara was entertaining the idea before that malchus could be something negative. But again, we established that no, both yoda and malchus have only positive meanings. Okay. So then again, the Gemara gets into the whole discussion. There's three different mandomers of what the expected time frame is for the yoda. In particular, what you have is the Gemara describes, you have within the yoda itself, you have what are called revia, rishona, shnia, and shlishis. You have three different rain showers that are expected at different times during cheshvan, and according to one opinion, the third one is expected around Rosh Chodesh Kislev. And the point is, later on in the Pedic, it describes that if those haven't fallen in their time, then the yechidim start fasting, and eventually, if rain doesn't fall, then the tzibur starts fasting. Anyway. So the Gemara explains that you have these three revias. Why do we need to know? You have three different opinions of Tanoim when each of them is expected. Why do we need to know that? So the Gemara brings, as far as the first revia, it's important to know certain halachas. As far as the third one, it's important to know as far as certain halachas. Then the Gemara discusses, why do we need to know when the second one is expected? And so the Gemara brings several different opinions why we need to know that. What halacha is relevant? What halacha depends on the time of revia shmiya? So one of them, the Gemara brings, is Tanan. We learn in a Mishnah, and Masen Nen and the Surfin, the Tevin of Akash Shal Shvius. Up to what point in the year are you allowed to have Hana from and to burn for firewood, straw, and stubble of Shvius? So you have during Shemitah year, you're not harvesting the grain in the normal way, but you have Sfichim, you have plants that grow on their own from seeds that fell in previous years. You can't eat them, but you can't eat them. They're abundant because the Chum were concerned that you're going to plant them and pretend like it grew on its own, but you have, there are certain things that you're allowed to do with it. And including you're allowed to take the straw and use it to feed your animals or firewood or whatever. But eventually there comes a point in the year with every kind of produce, you have a point when it comes to the time of beer. You have the rulers, as the Gemara is going to say in another line, the rulers, we had in Nashi in last week's parasha, as long as you have a particular type of produce is available, l'chaya basada, it's available for the wild animals out in the forests, in the fields, then you're allowed to have it for your animals at home. Once kol l'chaya, once it's gone out in the wild, then you have to get rid of whatever you have in your house. So Machalik is Rishonim what beer consists of exactly. According to most Rishonim, just means that you have to put it outside your house and declare it hefker, and then you're allowed to be zoichen it against the hefker. According to the Rambam, it means you actually have to eat it or burn it before there's mana beer. Every kind of produce has its own time of beer when there's nothing left of it growing any place in the country these days. Every year, Shmita, the Bote Dinim in Eretz Yisrael, publish lists of all the different kinds of fruits and vegetables, which were when the shasa beer is for different ones. Anyway, so like this was saying that up until what point in the year after Shmita are you allowed to use the straw and stubble of Shmias agitated or via Shmia until the second rainfall during Cheshvan comes? So that's why it's what's one of the reasons why it's important to know when the expected date of that is. My time, a defib, based on the pasuk. The pasuk says that the produce of Shemitah should be available for your domestic animals and for the wild animals that are in your land, from which we learn, as long as the wild animals are able to eat of some type of produce out in the fields, and you're allowed to feed that same kind of produce to your animals at home. But once it's been used up, once there's no more of it available in the wild for the wild animals, then you have to remove it for your animals from the house. Then you have to do the beer, Peter Shvius, and again you have the machlokas for showing what exactly the beer consists of. So the point is, when it comes the time of Revi'a Shmia, is the time you're not going to find the straw or the stubble out for wild animals to eat anymore. Therefore, that's now the time you have to get it out of your house. So the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Abahu, my Loshin Revi'a. Why are we calling rain Revi'a? The reason is, it's something that, so to speak, mates with the earth. In other words, you can compare that the earth is like a woman who needs to be fertilized by her husband, and the same way the ground has to be fertilized by the rain in order to produce crops. We have, in fact, the earth is malchus, and it needs zot to be mashpiyad. The rain, the rain is the rusik of asata that we do our mitzvahs, and it's mashpiyah lamaila, and then it causes clouds and rain of ruchnius and of gashmius to come. So therefore, that's the hashpah that then has an effect on malchus. Kidir of Yehuda, and this is like what Rav Yehuda says. Domer of Yehuda, mitra baila da'ara. The rain is the husband of the earth. Mitra baila da'ara, who it's the husband of the earth. Shenema, as the pasuk says, ki kasha yerda geshem v'ashelag min hashamayim, the same way as the rain and the snow fall from the heavens, v'shama lo yoshu, when it doesn't return there, ki im hir v'asaret, until it's watered the earth, v'hilida, and caused the earth to give birth, v'hitzmicha, and causes it to produce plants. So we see that the effect of the rain on the earth is described as v'hilida, is described as like a husband and wife producing a child, and the wife is going to give birth. So that's Marsha points out that's if it just meant if it was just the earth giving birth, then it would say yold of its sumfa. Hoy lida, the hitzmicha, implies that there has to be a husband involved, and that husband metaphorically is the rain. Later on in the parak, in fact, Marsha points out there's something later on in the parak that uses the opposite metaphor that says that it's a good year when Tavis is like a widow when it's all muddy and full of when in other words it's full of the rain and it's all muddy and everything, so that's a good year. Anyway, so we see that there is that comparison to a husband and wife between the rain and the earth. Further on, the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Chisda, Yisham, yeah.
what's the union between the connection of Zion Cheshvan in Israel and here and all the rain? What is all that?
So it talks about it primarily later in the parak, but the gist of it is, in Eretz Yisrael, they start davening for rain, Zion Cheshvan, because that's 2 weeks after Sukkot is over. That gives enough time for all the Ole Regel to get to the extreme border of Eretz Yisrael. So this way they don't get held up by the rain. There's a sif actually where the Rebbe talks about. You see the Avos Yisrael embedded in that. The people of Eretz Yisrael need rain as soon as possible after Sukkot. Really, they could use it even during Sukkot as well, but again, that would cause them hardship sitting in the sukkah. By rights, they would want to be able to start as soon as possible after Sukkot is over, but for the sake of the Bnei Chutzlaretz or for the sake of the stragglers, where it takes 2 weeks to get there, then they're waiting for 2 weeks to daven for the rain they need. Meanwhile, in the rest of Chutzlaretz, in Bavel, the Gemara said later on, Daf Yud, in Bavel, they didn't need rain because Bavel is low-lying and swampy. They didn't need rain until much later in the season. They began 60 days after Tkufas Tishrei, which comes out nowadays in early December. So in practice, all of Bnei Chutzlaretz follow that, although we talked about a week or two ago about the Rosh's opinion about that back in his time, where he argued that every country should be able to set its own time depending on its own climate, and the whole discussion that went on as far as when Jews started settling in the Southern Hemisphere about what they do over there. So yeah. So it's December, it's the night after December 4th in most years, and the night after December 5th in years before secular leap year. The reason being, here we have in Rambam Shloisha Parakim these days, today actually, today's Rambam Shloisha Parakim, talk about Tkufas Shmuel and Tkufas Rav Abba. The Tkufa that we use for this purpose is Tkufas Shmuel, which makes the year to be exactly 365 days and 6 hours, and it comes out, each tkufa, each season, is exactly 91 days and 7 and a half hours. So you can calculate from one tkufa to the next. If you calculate, then, based on the figures that Amram gives, it comes out, according to Tkufas Shmuel, Tkufas Tishrei is always going to be at either 3 a.m., 9 a.m., 3 p.m., or 9 p.m. Now, three out of those 4 times are during the day. 9 p.m. is already the next day, la halacha. Therefore, we have, so what it is, the Shmuel's Tkufa is always going to be on October 6th, but in a year before secular leap year, it comes out, it's going to be already the night going into October 7th, which la halacha is already considered the next day. So we count from that, and therefore we get to December 4th or 5th, as the case may be. It actually changes gradually over time, because since nowadays, since the 1500s, the secular calendar drops leap years at the ends of some centuries in order to keep better pace with the sun. You have only the year 2000, for example, was a leap year, but the year 1900 was not, and the year 2100 is not scheduled to be. So therefore, it slips by 1 day. It slips by 3 days every 400 years. So if it comes the year 2100, for example, instead of it being December 4th or 5th, respectively, it'll be December 5th or 6th, and gradually shifts over time. Somebody once made a calculation, actually, that if you were to keep going like that, over a period of tens of thousands of years, eventually we'd start saying the same Talmud when it comes Pesach, and we have to stop saying it. Obviously, Mashiach will be here long before that, and the whole thing is a non-issue then. That's a short piece. Let's knock it off. Amar Chista, Shomim Sheyodu Amitzas Medina. If rain falls on only part of a country, and it doesn't fall on a different part of the country, then you can't say that what it says in the Torah of Otzar Sashamayim has come true. I think Gemara mentions various other things, that if such and such happens, then there's no problem of Otzar, and this is one of them. So Gemara asks, Eini, is that so? You have a pasuk in Amos, the Navi is telling them in Hashem's name various things, that Hashem is saying, I brought one and another disaster on you to motivate you to do tshuva, and you're not getting the message. And one of them is, he says, v'gamanochi manati mekemes hageshem, I held back from you the rain, but oj shloisha chadoshim lakotzer, when there's still 3 months left until the harvest. So in other words, the harvest is in me, like you said, missing time. So from Tavis and on, there hasn't been any rain, which means, therefore, that your crops have started to grow, but then they're going to dry up. The imtauti al irachas, and I've made it rain on one city val irachas loy amter, and on a different city I didn't make it rain. Chelka achas timoter, one plot of land is getting rained on. Vechelka shall tamter aleha, and another plot which is not rained on, tivosh, ends up drying up. And the Novi is saying, in other words, you should have taken a lesson from that, and you're not taking a lesson. And the Eved is saying, what am I supposed to do with you, buddy? Later on in the Masechta, by the way, the Mishnah mentions that Taka, for that reason, if you have something like that, a place where you have it rains in one place and not in another, is a reason to declare fast and to dive into the Eidishtir for Rachmanis. Anyway, for Omer of Yehuda, Omer of Shtei and Meklola. When we say Chelka Achas Timoter, the Chelka Shalitam Tirolel, both them are negative. Both the one that had rain had too much rain and everything got flooded. And the one that didn't have rain, everything dried up. So therefore, so we see that when it rains on one city and not on one country, on one part of the country and not another, it's not a simen bracha. So what is Rav Chista saying? There's no problem of otzar over there. And the answer is like kasha, hadar also tshuva, hadar also kedimiboy. Like depends. Did it too much rain fall in the one area and therefore it's flooded? That's no good. So then that's what the pasuk is describing. Whereas when in one place it falls a normal amount of rain, and then in another place it doesn't, then it's not such a thing of otzar, because fine, it's all within one country, it'll be easy enough to bring rain and bring food from the one place to the other, and therefore there won't be a fan. Amar of Asi, or of Ashi, Deitanami. In fact, we see that clearly from the word of the pasuk, just the timoter. The pasuk doesn't just say that it gets rained on, it uses the word timoter, which means tehei makoim moter. It ends up being a place full of rain, meaning that it gets flooded. So that's what the pasuk is saying. When you have one place is timoter, and the other one tivash, that's the problem. And yes, that is an example of va'otzar, that's an example of the Eibush showing that he's displeased with the Jewish people and they have to do tshuva. Whereas we're saying, when you have a normal amount of rain in one place, and no rain in another place, and it's all within one country, that's not a problem, that's not va'otzar. They can just easily bring rain and food from one place to another. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ola. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch brings that when we're counting people for a minyan, we use the pasuk Hashia Samecha. Gleich Vertol, and that I once heard, you can see from that a minyan needs 15 people. Hashia Samecha. Urem. So it has 10 words, so therefore you use it to count for a minyan. Now, the Rashi in Sefer HaParadis brings a different pasuk. They use the pasuk Vani Baroy Chastacha, which also has 10 words. So where is Kitzur Shulchan Aruch getting Hashia Samecha? So it is in the later generations in Ikvus and Meshicha, when we have the tremendous darkness, the doubled and redoubled darkness of Zman HaGolus. So when 10 Jewish people gather together, the first thing we want to do is ask for the Geula with this pasuk Hashia Samecha Uvarachas Nachsecha Urein Menasim Ad Olam. Then you see him have to count with Moshe and Aaron, yeah, so. Yeah. There are actually Mephoshim who say that they are, since it was a census that Hashem directly commanded, they could count the people directly. Not everybody agrees that it was done. I think that Ramban there talks about that maybe that census was done directly, the Google Oysum, as the Pasuk says. Alright. Continuing with Halachas of Shabbos, we were talking about putting up a temporary partition or something. So in the same way, when you have a temporary tent, we touched on this before, even now with a vertical mechitza, we said it depends whether you're making it for a purpose in halacha, for example, like we gave the example to allow tashmish hamitzah or something. On the other hand, when it comes to a horizontal covering, then it's stricter, even if it's an oil on rye, if it's going to be at least a tefach al tefach, the room tepach, the same as an oil for the halachas of tumah, then you're not allowed to make it on Shabbos. An example that we talked about before would be, for example, a baby carriage. You wouldn't be allowed to open up the hood of it on Shabbos, again, unless, as we talked about before, unless it was opened up at least one tepach before Shabbos, and then you can finish extending it out on Shabbos. Another example he gives over here is that if the hooks on top of it are within 3 tefachim of one another, then it's also considered an oil mitzad lavu, and therefore you'd be able to spread out something on top of that. Not the hooks. You have hoops. You have like on top of a baby carriage or a crib or something like that. Sometimes you have hoops that can hold up a canopy, and then you spread a blanket or something, or a sheet or something on top of that. So then if they're within 3 tefachim of one another, then it's lavud, and then you would be able to spread a sheet over it on Shabbos, given that, again, it's only an oil adah.
Yeah, but